Greetings. I'm Terry Thornton. I'm curator of education. It's my great pleasure to welcome you to Tuesday Evenings at the Modern. Looking out, I think most of you know about Tuesday Evenings. If you don't, I think tonight will hook you, so you're going to want to get online and check out the lineup that's yet to come. It's been a really great lineup so far. We're into week three. Valentine's Day was a hit. It was fantastic. We have podcasts that go up in about 2 weeks, so I invite you, if you missed it, to go back and listen to the podcast. But I have to say, it's not going to be the same without the images. Those of you, I know who was here last week by who just laughed. Next week we have the upcoming Focus Show artist, Katie Patterson. Here, Katie is a hot young British artist who makes what I think are magical, scientifically informed works, and I really love that magically and scientific got into one description. Intimately addressing topics as vast and distant as stars or the moon. It's a show and a talk that I've been looking forward to immensely, and I highly advise you to come back next week and bring a friend. There has been great anticipation for tonight's presentation as well by me, and I know many of you because that's been the conversation in the preceding weeks. It has always been wonderful to hear from smart and talented artists, but smarts and talent put toward work that sets out to make a direct difference in its community and the world is a bonus beyond measure, and I think that certainly describes the work of Tim Rollins. I really couldn't be more thrilled about the artist Tim Rollins being here tonight to present his collaborative work with KOS, which you know stands for Kids of Survival. Tim is an acclaimed activist, artist, and teacher living in the South Bronx, New York, who founded Group Material in 1980, which was a collection of young artists kind of pulling together their resources, determined to mount critical exhibitions addressing social themes in what was then the conservative atmosphere, maybe much like now, of the 80s, an effort that is seen as, in fact, a precursor of Tim's work with KOS. Tim earned a BFA from the School of Visual Arts in New York, and after graduate studies in art education and philosophy at New York University, he began teaching art in the South Bronx. He continued teaching at UC Davis, SVA, turns out Yale, and some other places that were not on his CV when I read it earlier today, but I was hearing him talk. He's very much still an active teacher. In 2003-2005, Tim was resident professor of art and education at Drexel University in Philadelphia, where he did some great work, very innovative work. I think he actually was a resident professor at an elementary school in conjunction with that project as well. But perhaps now best known for his 1984 launching of the Art and Knowledge Workshop with KOS. Within a year of that profound act, Tim Rollins plus KOS were showing work in the 1985 Whitney Biennial. Which, of course, speaks to the strength of the work. Art critic and writer Lucy Lepard, who is also the final speaker for our Tuesday evening series this spring, just to put in that plug, has written about the group. The vitality of Rollins and KOS art is traceable not only to its politico-aesthetic successes, but to its authenticity. The exuberance of creative discovery is very close to the surface. This is a form of idealism, like the tabula rasa of Dada, minimalism, punk, an attempt to clean the slate with various kinds of violence against the status quo. Since the 1985 Whitney, Tim Rollins and KOS has gone on to show extensively around the world, including Documenta 8 in 1987, Again, they only started in 1984. The Venice Biennale in 1988, the 1988 Carnegie International, and again, the Whitney Biennial in 1991 and in 2006, as well as exhibitions at the Museum of Contemporary Art Los Angeles, the Dia Art Foundation in New York, De Young Museum in San Francisco, the Walker Art Center in Minneapolis, and the ICA Boston. Their work is in prestigious public and private collections, including the Museum of Modern Art in New York, the Hirshhorn Museum of Art, the Tate Gallery of London, the Smithsonian Museum of Art, of American Art, and the Dallas Art Museum, or the Dallas Museum of Art. In 2009, the group had a 20-year retrospective at the Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College that traveled to Fry Museum in Seattle and the ICA in Philadelphia, and there's a beautiful book produced in conjunction with that exhibition through MIT, I think. Most recently, Tim Rollins and KOS just opened a major survey exhibition at the Museum of Contemporary Art in Basel, Switzerland, that was just last month, and that seems to be one of many recent demands. So you can imagine my gratitude for Tim Rollins accepting the invitation to be here tonight to share his experiences and the work of this extraordinary group in his aptly titled presentation, Art and the Beloved Community. So please join me in welcoming and thanking Tim Rollins.
And after hearing that, I'm in no ways tired. Hi, everybody. Talk back to me, I'm Baptist. Hello, everybody. Good evening. That's all right. Yeah, I'm one of the good Baptists, okay? I am so thrilled to be here. I could just about bust. I love Texas. I love Texans. I love this place. And I love you already. Is that all right? That's all right. I want to tell you my story. Is that all right? And I'm going to strike fire and retire. And walking through these beautiful galleries, I saw something. It made me take what I call a mental flight. Would you like to take a mental flight with me? There'll be three tonight, so fasten your safety belts, baby. Okay. And no security. I'm walking through the galleries, and I see this big, big work. And I take a mental flight. And I am in a little town called Pittsfield, Maine. And in the hills, in the center part. And in Pittsfield, Maine, at that time, it's much better now, but we're talking about very early 70s, okay? So late 60s, early 70s. I wanted to be an artist so bad, since I was a little boy, that I couldn't help myself. My brother, for Christmas, would want a G.I. Joe. My two sisters would want an Easy Bake Oven and a Barbie Dream House, right? But what Timmy wanted every year was that big-ass box of Crayola crayons, 180 of them, I think, with that pencil sharpener in the back, and a big-ass pile of doodle pads, and I was in heaven. Can I get a witness in this house right now? So I'm feeling you like that, right? And if you want to be an artist, right, in rural Maine, because if you can't eat it, drink it, smoke it, or sleep with it, it ain't worth having. And I know that attitude is in Texas a little bit today. Am I right? Okay. Yeah, you weren't worth having. So if you want to be an artist, you were suspect. Your mental health was suspect. Your sexuality was suspect. Your sense of reality was suspect. So I had to get out as soon as I possibly could. But I had no way out intellectually. So this is for those people who want to know how museums change lives. We never really had art in school. It'd be Friday afternoon. It was something you didn't do. And then luckily, we built a new school, and this very amazing, kind of hot young art teacher from New York came for 1 year. That's all she lasted, right? Donna Severance. I'll never forget her name. And we had art as a major course. Of course, I skipped gym. I skipped math. I skipped everything. And we hid out in her room and made work all day long. All right. And luckily, I still was a pretty good straight A student, so I made it up. People, you know, and the principal was my best friend's dad. So we hustled like crazy, and I got to be in the, and she was felt sorry for us, I could tell, these poor white hillbilly kids. And she goes, "We're going to arrange a field trip, and we're going to Boston. 4-hour trip to Boston, the big city." I was so excited, I couldn't believe it. And we were going to go to the Museum of Fine Arts. And I'm just so excited. We had our little lunches, and, you know, I was bugging out. And two things I saw that day changed my life. As we're going down Interstate 95 towards the museum through Boston, you could look over, and I saw for the first time my first ghetto, urban ghetto, Roxbury. Country poor is different from city poor. And I never had a problem. You don't have to worry about, you know, stepping on a heroin needle out in the backyard in your bare feet. When I saw the devastation of that neighborhood, I remember just sitting there, looking out the bus window, and the first emotion was shock, you know? But then the second emotion was anger. This amazing anger. And I'm going back to my childhood hero at the time, right? Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., who was assassinated, you know, when I was 13 years old. First real tragedy in my life, believe it or not, was that. And he, in The Strength of Love, he writes that the word anger comes from the Norse root for the word to grieve. And I grieved. I grieved. Now we get into the big city. And we come into this amazing palace. Right? And we're going in. And of course, everyone wants to go see the mummies. Right? And I said, I did not come all the way here to see some friggin' mummies, all right? And I was the art kid. And so everyone ran ahead to the mummies. And I kind of, like we were walking around today, Terry, kind of, something was drawing me somewhere. And I'm going, and I'm walking, and I'm looking. And in the place was this room. And in the room were, I think there were 8 of them. They were big, giant refrigerator boxes, splayed out and nailed on the wall. Some had a little bit of paint underneath of them. Some had, you know, things like that. And I'm like, wow. Wow. Because, you know, when you're a country kid and you're an art kid, your favorite toy is basically a big refrigerator box in the backyard, and you can turn it into a spaceship or a pirate ship or a Playboy mansion, depending on who your neighbor is, huh? And so I'm just like, oh, and I'm like, you know, Tim, if this is what art can be, and if this is what an artist can give him or herself permission to do, baby, that's for me. That's it. I'm done. I'm committed. Signed, sealed, delivered. I'm yours. And I go to the label. Robert Rauschenberg. Cardbirds. I'm getting emotional. Port Arthur, Texas. All right? Amazing. And that was the two moments. Fascinating because 15 years later, I'm in New York, studying at the School of Visual Arts. I am the assistant to an amazing artist, conceptual artist, Joseph Kosuth. And he goes, Timmy, you know, I got to go someplace. You might want to go with me. You might be kind of interested in this. Where are we going? I'll tell you later. We're walking Lafayette Street, and there's this church, you know? And I said, who's in this church? It was Robert Rauschenberg's loft. And we're sitting there, and it's illegal, but I'm drinking Jack Daniels with Robert Rauschenberg. And I tell him the story, and tears get in his eyes. And he goes, you know, Timmy, you're the type of person I make my art for. Mental flight. Let's go. It's September 11th. And I'm in my studio in Chelsea. We have two, South Bronx, Chelsea. And if you can imagine, it really is about as big as this stage, which is cool. And we have floor-to-ceiling windows facing south. And then we have a big wall that we make our work on over here. And it happens. It's around 9 in the morning, and we are making work on deadline for an exhibition that's going to open in a commercial gallery in New York. It's September 23rd, something like that. And we don't know what's going on. We're making a very, very beautiful, joyous work made and inspired by young kids that were responding to A Midsummer Night's Dream after William Shakespeare. Anyone ever heard of that? Huh? And it was beautiful flowers. I'll show you one in a little while. And so we're making this beautiful, innocent, joyous, buoyant, exuberant, beautiful thing here. And then you look, and we're going, Ricky is there, Angel's there, and they're there. Angel was 11 there, now he's 36. Ricky just turned 40, right? They both went to university, they're both artists, they're still with me today. And we were there, and what's going on? The World Trade Center's on fire. Wow, that's awful. Okay, but we kept kind of working. And then the second plane hit. And wow. So we're looking here and making this beautiful, creative, song-filled work made by kids from like the age of 8 to about 18 from all over the city. And then you look here and you see the most heinous act of destruction that you could even imagine. And you would look here, and you would look here. And everybody, I want to let you know, it was that moment, 20 years into this project, we decided we knew what side we were on. The next day, you had nothing but these huge poltergeists, these huge giant flumes of smoke and ash, and we're there. We decide we're going to go back. We're going to keep working. We're going to work. We're going to work. We're going to work on our dream. We're going to work on the dream because we got a nightmare down there and we got a dream right here. And we opened the window and the wind blew and the odor. I'm getting it right. And the weird thing, everybody, is that I said, I know that smell. What is it? What is it? You know when you remember scents, you know? I know that smell. It smelled a little bit like growing up. I sound weird, but growing up, one of the most fun things to do, this is kind of pathetic, in town, was to go with Daddy to the town dump. Because it was nothing, it was open air, you know, some of us know, it was just nothing but burning. It looked like hell. It was fantastic. It was like, you know, oh, wow, you know, and it was kind of like that smell, but it wasn't that smell. I go, what is it? And Rick, who's a pretty macho Dominican dude, you know, and he had tears in his eyes. And he goes, Tim, don't you remember? That's what our neighborhood smelled like every day when we were little. Don't you remember? Whew. Mental flight. Want to go? Now we're going back, okay? It's 19, about the same time, almost exactly the same time, you know, around 1980. And I'm right out of school. We got some students in here, and I'm feeling you, okay? And some grad students, you know. And when you get out of school, you know, you think you're all that. And, you know, a bag of chips and the movie and the soda, and you're all that. And I had studied with Joseph Kosuth, got my BFA. Then I went to NYU to study philosophy and education. And I was charged up. I had all this theory. I had charged up, but there was no place to discharge. Right? And I knew everything about everything. There was no place to really put this. And I joined a program called Learning to Read Through the Arts. And we were in Harlem on Monday, Jamaica, Queens on Tuesday, South Bronx on Wednesday, and Lower East Side on Thursday. Friday, they gave you the day off. There were no benefits. You weren't in the unions. You're essentially being exploited. But coming from Maine, I said, I don't want to hang out with all my friends who just wear black all day long, smoke cigarettes, and stay below 14th Street, and that's their life. And I was excited to explore the city. And so, but boy, Wednesdays, South Bronx, 1980. And I visited a school and a very young, dynamic Puerto Rican principal named George Gallego. I found about this later, but I know what he thought. He said, this white hillbilly boy is stupid enough, naive enough, arrogant enough, romantic enough, enthusiastic enough, foolish enough, and I think I can snare him and get him on our faculty at our junior high school, intermediate school 52 on Kelly Street in the South Bronx. Alma mater of General Colin Powell, and you know where he learned his stuff. And it was famous for being the school with the highest number of violent incidents against teachers in all the public school system. And I was very New England, Yankee, liberal, goody-goody, you know, Vista worker type. Like, oh, yeah, let me go to the ghetto and work with brown children for, you know, 2 weeks and then brag about it at cocktail parties and dinner parties and gallery openings for the rest of my life. You know how summer we are. Huh? And I said, I'm going to go. How do you get to the school? And he goes, oh, we want you to come on up. You can come for 2 weeks, and let's see if we can get something going. Where do I get off? You take the 2 train uptown to Prospect Avenue. Ah, Prospect Avenue. It sounds so nice. You know, like Prospect Avenue. I said, great. Yeah, okay. I'm there. And on that crisp day, just like September 11th, way before, not a cloud in the sky, and you would go up, and in the subway in New York, you're underground, and then towards Prospect Avenue, you go up on the L. You know what I'm talking about, right? You know I'm not lying. And there we are, and it was, the devastation was mind-blowing. You could not believe it. Acres and blocks of empty abandoned buildings. And I go, thank God I just said 2 weeks. This is crazy. You can't imagine people living here, let alone being educated here. And then the door opened on the platform, and there was that smell, that acrid, charred smell. The buildings are burnt out shells, and they look like burnt harmonicas. It's so weird. Put on their ends. And when the autumn wind would blow through them, they actually wheezed. It was like a friggin' horror movie. And I'm walking, and crackhead over here, wild dogs, like packs of them over here, right? And sirens over here, a fire over here. But then you had a mom, a mom, with her 3 kids, looking this way, going there, and they're walking to school. And I go, wow, 2 weeks. I get to the school. You can hear the school before you even walk in. Sheer pandemonium. You walk on in. The bells are going off. The security guards are patting down people and screaming and cursing at the kids. The kids are cursing at the security guards. And I go in and I say, I'm here. I'm, you know, whoa. And sign in. And I went, hey, where's the office? And I go to the main office. Go see. Gallego is waiting for you. They're all waiting for you. I said, okay, cool. And so I went on in. And Gallego's right there. And everyone's like, and I walk in and they applaud. And then George goes, okay, everybody, pay up. Pay up. He had been betting that I would not make it the three blocks to the school. Pay up. And then he goes, Tim, we're so excited you're here. And guess what? What? We got you a room. You're laughing, but you know what I'm talking about. I go, yeah. No, and guess what? It has a sink. I was supposed to be the hot new art teacher for 2 weeks, I thought, until I walked through the hallways. And they're teaching kids in bathrooms, in the hallways. It was a five-story building, but three of the floors had been so wrecked that they couldn't use them. And I go into my room. And yes, it was a room. And yes, there was a sink, but there was no drain for the sink. The water came down into a white spackle bucket, which I had to take and dump into the boys' room across the hallway. There were no windows. They were boarded up with cheap plywood, and all over the windows was this horrible, like, bad graffiti and stolen magic markers, you could tell. But the most interesting thing was this. I'm looking up. The ceiling must be 15, 16, 17 feet. I'm looking up, and there's all this amazing graffiti, kind of good stuff too, kind of flow, and yeah, and in charcoal, big thick charcoal on the ceiling. And I go, George, these are 13. How the hell did they get up there? He goes, well, the previous teachers before you had little control over the class. I said, well, obviously. And in New York, we don't have air-conditioned schools. Those old schools are from the 1900s. So what they have is in the summer, you have these big, long poles, right? Do you remember, sir? And yeah, and you had to pull the windows down just to get a breath of air. Torture, right? These kids had taken thick vine charcoal. You know what that is? That big, thick chunks of charcoal with masking tape tied on the end, and like they did this on the ceiling. Like late Matisse. You ever see those pictures of Matisse? And he's old in the bed. He's there. Baby, it looked like a hip-hop Sistine Chapel. And I'm like, you know, Joy, if these kids are this diabolical, right, and creative, we may have something here. Okay? And I said, okay, let's go. And what I decided to do is I brought my boombox, which was really smart, and because the South Bronx is on fire literally, but it was on fire culturally, and so it was the advent of hip-hop. And so in a funny way, everything looked horrible, but it was joyous because you had to have joy just to get through your day. And it was Africa Mambata and Zulu Nation and Grandmaster Flash and Treacherous Three, and everybody came from the hood. It was great. So the music was terrific. And the art teacher coming in was the hero because everyone wanted to do it. There's no money for sports. There's no money for band. There's no nothing. Everybody just had their black books. Right? And they did their designs, and they did their spoken word, right? And then they would do the jams, taking the turntables, using the juice from the traffic, the street lights, and then it'd be an impromptu party, and then everyone would take those refrigerator boxes, they're taken from the wall, they're on the floor now, they're on the street, and everyone's like breakdancing on them. So, in a very funny way, it was the greatest time to be there as an artist. So, I said, I want that, I want the music, I have brought two reams of crappy white copy paper. I bought about 24 Mongol number one pencils. Anyone know what I'm talking about? Huh? And that was it. There's no materials. There's no nothing. And I said, I want this first group. I want it for 1 hour. Okay, no problem, because they were all the special ed kids, huh? So no one want. They just, you know, everyone got a pass, big time. And they just get them off our hands for 1 hour. Okay, and here we go. The bell rings, you know, forever. Ooh. And then here they come. It's a banging on my metal door. And in they come. Little 11-year-old, 12-year-olds, 13-year-old. And I put the tables in one row, like I still do to this day, and boom, there they were. You know that movie Gremlins? And they're like, and I could hear what they were like, and I'm being quiet. And they go, he's young. I mean, that's me up there, dude. I would look like that. Don't take this wrong, but they did say this. He's so white, he could get a moon burn. It's a good one, right? Let's make him cry. Who wants to make him cry first? Now, I had enough experience at that point where I knew how to put on the death mask. The teacher death mask. Do you know this one? Where... Yeah, that, like, you know, serial killer look. Mayo, ooh, we crazy. Let's just do what he said. And I said, I heard all of you really love art. Am I right? And he's like, yeah. And I could just tell already, you hate school. Hell yeah. So here we go. I took the paper. Boom. I did this in Maine this weekend. I just went, boom. Boom. They never see so much paper in their life. Boom. 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 This is what you're going to do in the next hour. You're going to draw the best drawing that you have ever made in your life. No pressure. And they go, now? And I go, that's my favorite word, baby. Now. Go. And they look at me, he crazy. And then, the music's blasting so loud they can't talk to each other. It works. And I'm like, you know, I'm trying to be cool, right? And I've been working with kids and, you know, all kinds of, you know, every, and I'm looking. And in my church, we call it shouting material. It was so brilliant. I mean, just like, oh my God, where is this coming from? You know, it's like these kids have been starving, right? And oh my God, I have to be, Well, of course, the hour evaporates, like gone. And I said, we got to go. No, we're not going to go. I said, I got to go. I'm real sorry. We got to go. But, you know, they all looking at each other's stuff. I said, how'd you do? I said, this is the best drawing we ever made in our life. I want to do more. And then Carlos, who now is an auxiliary cop. He's a cop, believe it or not. He's the worst. I'm having flashbacks. And he said, he like this. And they go, ask him. And he goes, can I ask you something? I go, what? We're good, ain't we? And I go, yeah, you're all right. Hell no, we're real good. And guess what? It's written all over your face that you think we're good too. Like, just like that. And then he goes, can I ask you another question? And I go, what? And he goes, are you going to stay or are you going to leave like all the rest? Oh, manipulative little so-and-so. And I'm like, I'm, you know, stammering. I'm like, well, you know, I'm going to be here for 2 weeks and da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Can I ask you one more question? I go, what? He goes, would you stay? Oh. I'm like, oh, I'm in an after-school TV movie. Come on. Oh. And I go, let me talk to George. All right, let me talk to George. And Mr. Gallego, of course. And then I went down to the office, and here's George. In, you know, at that time, principals were the only ones that had the big, nice, soft chairs that you could rock in them, you know. There you go. Big-ass grin. He goes, they're good, aren't they? I said, George, my mind is so blown. I just da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. He goes, let me ask you a question. And I'm going, he goes... I'm like, yeah, that's a setup. And I'm like, let me ask you a question. I see on your resume that when you were growing up in Maine that you were a junior lifesaver. I worked at the pool and da-da-da. Okay, let me ask you something. If you saw these 12 kids and in the middle of a pond and they are flailing and you know they're going to go down, if you don't go in there and get at least one or two of them back, what would you do? Would you do it, or would you leave and read about them in the newspaper the next day? Where did he get this? I have a question. Would you stay? And everybody, that was when my life started like passing before my eyes. You know, like, oh, don't. And I use that one word that gets us, right, in so much trouble, especially as us teachers, huh, lovers. And the word was, yes. Say yes. Say yes. 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 So I said yes, no, yes. And I ended up staying that school for 8 years, and now we are still working together all throughout the communities based in the South Bronx, and we're celebrating our 32nd year to this day. We are in over 95 museum collections worldwide. Every single one, this was the first crew, every single one of them went to college. And I'm not talking, you know, I'm talking Bard, I'm talking School of Visual Arts, I'm talking Cooper Union, University of Pennsylvania, University of Washington. I'm going to San Francisco tomorrow to meet Allah, who is a gangbanger when I met him, and he got into San Francisco Art Institute, and then he did graduate school at Stanford, and now he's a professor at Berkeley. Tell me art doesn't change lives. Doesn't change lives. I'm going to walk you through this. Yeah, so I mentioned that. Yeah, this is one of the first works we did. It was interesting. I got back the next day, and they said, I said, guess what? I'm going to stay. And they go, yeah. And then I said, yeah, but guess what? I'm not doing it because I'm nice. I'm doing it because I'm angry. And guess what? I think you're all so beautiful and intelligent, and I think your lives are being wasted in this place. Yeah. And he said, and I'm not doing it because I'm being cute, and I'm not a missionary. I'm on a mission, but I'm not a missionary. But we got to do something about this. We got to get out of this place if it's the last thing we ever do, and we can do it through the magic carpet of art. And yeah. And I said, but the deep thing, and this is really true, everyone, is that I felt the voice. The calling. I had no evidence. I only had faith. And it really felt like something underneath my sternum, the pressure that said, you know what? I know we're going to make art while we're here. But something in my soul, in my bones, tells me that we're going to make history. What do you think? And they look at me like, he is still crazy. And they're make history, right? Yeah, raise the roof, woof, 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 history, woof, woof, woof. And so what we decided to do is we decided to do a curriculum. We called we no longer class 318. It was the Art and Knowledge Workshop. And we were going to do everything inspired by works of classic literature and music. All right? Everything that they thought we could not do. Our first project was Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. And what I did is okay, so you always... You got all this. You can't do this with these kids. You can't. All the counselors are coming. The people that were paid tens of thousands of dollars to tell us what our kids could not do. Right? This is early 80s. It's getting better, everybody. But back then, it was a nightmare, you know? And sticking kids in special ed so they get extra federal money just for that. Huh? And I said, well, they can't read Frankenstein. What are you talking about? And I said, well, listen. Okay, Carlos may have dyslexia. They all these labels, dyslexia, learning disabled, emotionally handicapped, academically at risk, truant. This is a good one. Educatable, mentally retarded. This is another one I like. Don't get mad at me, but I know I'm right. ADD. Attention deficit disorder. Kids that can play Grand Theft Auto, video game, for 8 hours straight. without going to a bathroom. And they got ADD. Baby, I think they got TDD, teacher deficit disorder. If you can't say amen, say ouch. This is why I don't get invited to a lot of teacher conferences. But I know, hey, I gotta be real. So, and what I did is I would make my, and then the other thing, oh, well, what we'll do, but if they get all these labels, but how come Carlos, right, the alpha dog, how come he can memorize a Snoop Doggy Dog CD side A and B without one flaw? Everything perfect. I said, we're not thinking right here. So being, you know, I'm from Maine, all right? Sorry, but I am. And rural Maine. And when you're in Maine and you want to build a barn, you do not study the theory and structure of barn building in 19th century New England at a conference. You're not reading papers like The Barn and the Other. You got that joke, right? Yeah. You build a damn barn, all right? And if the barn's broken, what do? You fix it. And so here I am, drinking Heinekens, hanging out with my cat in my rocking chair in the evenings, and I am in a choir, and so we use the little Walkman with the tape. And here I am, like an idiot, reading aloud Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. I made my own books on tape. Uh-huh. So then what we do in between the music that we love, we would do this, and the kids would go into almost this trance. It was like a reverie. And I said, do not illustrate the text, but come up with something that it reminds you of in your everyday life. And this is how we made Frankenstein. It's about 15 by 6 feet. And they made tons and tons and tons of drawings on this crappy paper. And then we had no transparency, so I found, you know those old library book covers you had, like in junior high school, those plastic things? And we found a bunch of those in the garbage, so we cut the plastic off, and then using those little Sharpie pens that I like so much, that smell cool, and then, you know, and we would trace them, and then using an overhead projector, which I liberated from a burnt-out science teacher. He wasn't burnt out because he was never on fire in the first place, okay? And so, and we just, we would compose these things, and we did it on a grid of book pages taken from the book and archivally adhered to canvas. And then, so that was Frankenstein. Then we did Absalom, after William Faulkner. Mm-hmm. This is in the permanent collection of the Museum of Contemporary Art in Basel. This is up right now. And that was the second group. It's Georgie and Nelson, construction worker Nelson. Aristellus is a wonderful photographer. And I want you to take a good look at the little boy there, Chris, that great face there, because I have a story about him. And then we decided to do Kafka's America, in which we portray ourselves as golden horns. So we were very influenced by folk I like Dizzy Gillespie and Miles Davis, the first time the kids had ever heard really jazz. And that's us making it. And that's America One. Go, ooh. Ah. And we hit it with this one. And I go, wow. And we were included in a group show in Soho at a really well-known gallery, Barbara Gladstone. But I think they were expecting kids art, right? And it was Leon Golub, Jenny Holzer, Barbara Kruger, Eric Fischel, half the people that are in these galleries. And then us, who no one ever heard of. And someone came in from Chase Manhattan Bank, and the price was $5,000, and he bought it on site for the permanent collection. And I go to Barbara, and I go, this is on a Saturday, and I said, listen, could you do me a favor? Could you write me a check? And I won't cash it, I promise, but could you make your signature really dramatic on the bottom? Because it's something I want to do with my kids on Monday. Right? And she goes, this sounds good, I'll do this. And so I do my teaching, you know, 7 periods a day, 45 minutes a period, the dreaded lunch duty, especially on hot dog day, use your imagination. Another flashback, I'm like, oh. And then, but then the posse all met afterwards, it was the group you saw, and I said, guess what? Look, $2,500. and now we can rent our own studio. And Carlos goes, damn, white folk will buy anything. Let's make some more. And so we did, and that's how our career started. Yeah, this is America after Thoreau. We studied the drawings of Henry David Thoreau and transformed them into golden horns, inspired by another great mentor of ours, John Cage, who adored the kids, and we adored them. They all met Rauschenberg afterwards. Yeah. Red Badge of Courage by Stephen Crane, in which we made self-portraits as wounds. Heavy. Scarlet Letter by Nathaniel Hawthorne, where we take that A that's supposed to be a stigma. Huh? Everyone goes, you know, mainly young men. We have a few girls in the group. But how are these, you know, these kids in the Bronx going to relate to the Scarlet Letter? Well, you live in the poorest congressional district in the United States. You're special ed. You don't know who your daddy is. If you do, he's dead or in prison. You're not going to get out of junior high, let alone high school. College is not a dream. It's a fantasy for you. All those stigmas. And what we did is we, like Hester, who was very cool, she took that stigma and turned it into a transcendent emblem of pride. Why? Because she was an artist. And she could do that. She had the power to do that. This is Alice in Wonderland. And this is White Alice. The girls made this. And it's Alice when she drinks the potion. She comes too big for the room that she's been put in. And when, this is a pretty good image, but when you see it, it's just white, and you have to look at it for 5 minutes at least for the image to register. So what we, our work is very much about destroying invisibility, acknowledging it as well. And the same thing with Black Beauty by Anna Sewell. And these are our works on the great autobiography of Malcolm X. I'm in Republican territory. These are on Animal Farm by George Orwell. And that's another later picture of the main group. And these are works on with animal blood, beef blood, defibrinated beef blood, on The Temptation of St. Anthony by Flaubert. And that's also in the show, The Trinity. These are our works based on sculpture, based on Colo Collodi's Pinocchio. And we took our eyes and we went to a craftsman, third generation Austrian craftsman, who totally reproduced our eyes, and we inset them into the logs. And they kind of lay there. And it's about having vision but having no legs, if you know what I mean. In my church, we say you got to give your prayers already have wings, but you got to give them legs. And that's something we need to impart to our kids. And this is on The Frogs by Aristophanes. And this is the story I have to tell you, is that everything was going amazingly well. It's 1993. And one of that kid, the little kid you saw, Chris Hernandez, he had just gotten out of special ed. He was like our mascot. And the youngest one, he just turned 14, and he had just got accepted at the High School of Art and Design in New York City. Now, that is like winning the Oscar for a kid in our neighborhood. And I'm so thrilled. And it's Valentine's Day, 1993. I am in London at the Four Seasons Hotel, and we are planning a big show at the Hayward Gallery. And I get a call. And from Ricky. And Ricky, what's up? And he goes, Tim, they got Chris. And I'm, what do you tell me? Of course I know this. You call me all the way from New York, you know, to tell me that, yeah, the High School of Art and Design got Chris. No, they got Chris. Chris has been murdered with six other people in an apartment in his project on Prospect Avenue. And I remember, okay, I'm going to call you back. And I remember hanging up the phone and just staring. I don't know how much time it was. And I called back, Ricky, is that, are you still there? Yeah. He goes, I'm dreaming, right? This is a nightmare, right? This isn't real, is it, right? No, Timmy, come, Daddy, Poppy, you know, come home. We need you. Come home right now. And, oh, my God, it was like I'm back to, you know, then go to September 11th, and when the buildings went down, that's what's going down in my whole heart and my whole soul. I said, oh, my God. And I remember flying on British Airways, emergency flight. This horrible movie called The Last of the Mohicans is on, and you're not even 5 minutes in it, and they're slaughtering people. And I remember taking the airplane pillow and putting it in my face. And then I get straight to the studio, because we're really near the airport. And I go in, and there's all these reporters, like eight, and TV reporters and this and that. Carlos, right, fell on his knees and started weeping. Tim, they were filming everything. I said, how did everyone get in here? He said, we couldn't keep them out. We didn't know what to do. Come on. And I will never forget it. I felt like Jesus in the marketplace. And I said, I want you, all you bastards, out of here now. Right now. And they go, you can't do this. This is a great story. I said, my son, he's my son. Come on. He wasn't a story. And the amazing thing is that the last thing Chris worked on, it's a beautiful painting from the earth to the moon. He had the vision in a dream he took. I could have killed him, but he took broken auto glass and mirror glass, and we had it glued on this gigantic blue-black linen canvas, and it had just been acquired by the Hirshhorn Museum. I said, you should have been here when Chris was working on this. Because that was beautiful, and that you just want to see us bleed and suffer and die, get the out of here. And that was it. And the silence was awful, and the funeral was awful, and the police investigation was awful, and dealing with the reporters was awful, and dealing with the mom, I think we spent the last, you know, $1,000 in our account at that point on getting him, like, buried, because the mom had nothing, awful, and the silence was awful. And I lost four or five of my kids because they said, we're supposed to be kids of survival, Tim. This is bullshit. And if I'm going to go down, I'm going to go on the other end of the gun, not like Chris. He was the most innocent. You know, Carlos should have been murdered 15 times. He was so crazy. And it's the most innocent one that we had to lose. And I remember we were going through the studio and getting his things, and George, his best friend, who has graduated from Bard, he's a poet now, but they were best buddies together, and I'm like, you know, it was awful. And I was drinking myself to sleep every night and not dealing with the grief, not dealing with the post-traumatic stress. I mean, I had to be, you know, dad, I had to be the strong one, and I was losing it. And we're going through all the stuff, and we have to lose. We're losing our studio. We're losing, you know, the art market crash, all that great stuff. No more trips, no nothing. Everybody's got part-time jobs just to get going. And we're moving out of the studio, and we find a portfolio. And the portfolio has CH. He wrote like Zorro, you know, CH. I go, wow. And George found it. And we opened it up, and in it was drawings for the frogs after Aristophanes. Yeah. And I go, he kept it a secret. He loved to do that. He used to, he's the youngest, right? So everyone, we'd be brainstorming, and he'd come in, guess what I got? Huh, I think I nailed it. Yeah. You think I'm the dumb little one, huh? And I'm like, and George said, God, look what a gift Chris left us. I go, He goes, Tim, you know, with this, we can get Chris back. I go, what are you talking about? What? Chris, any art teachers in here? Some of your kids have heavy hands, you know? So they're drawing into the paper, and they almost emboss it. And I'll never forget it. And he goes, come here, touch this. And I put my finger in the indentation of the line, and he was there. I said, you're right. We can get him back. We can get him back. And that's me working with my great little knuckleheads. That's in Maryland. So we're doing workshops all over the world. And these are the Midsummer Night's Dream works that we're talking about, in which everyone becomes Puck. And Puck loves to transform things just for the sheer joy of it. He don't care if you have an art show or not. He don't care if you're in a beautiful museum. It's cool. It's wonderful. He don't care if you're on 60 Minutes or you're in a movie that wins an Emmy Award. We don't care. I mean, it's just about the sheer joy of making these magic flowers that have the power to make you fall in love with the next living thing you see upon wakening from a dream. And so that's what we did. We became Puck and made these flowers and accumulated them together, into this total universe of joy and beauty and possibility. Can you imagine this? This is the painting that's on this wall during the World Trade Center tragedy. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't wear the cowboy hat. I wasn't thinking. Yeah. And I think I'm gonna leave you with this. This is on Invisible Man by Ralph Ellison, the great African-American author that wrote this book on my birth year of 1955. And what's fascinating is that the first line is amazing. It is, I am an invisible man. If you're an invisible man, you state it, you're not invisible anymore. And so Dr. Ellison is a huge inspiration to us. But how did we get to this painting? We were working like crazy and trying to figure it out and just couldn't get through. And then George, right? We went through some newspapers, and the New York Post has a very tabloid headline, right? And it was about a murder victim. It says murder victim. And George goes, God, this reminds me of all that newspaper coverage about Chris when he was shot. Six people were shot, but only Chris was focused upon. Why? Because he made something. He made something. He was the youngest, and it was a good story. But he made something. He made something. And George took scissors, and he cut out the word victim, and he cut off the V, and then the I, and then the C, and it was Tim for a minute, and then the T. I am. And we blew it up 12 feet by 12 feet in this most beautiful indigo black blue that we all created together, the color of the night sky. I am. Not I was, not I want to be, not I could have been, not I should have been. I am. I think that's the essential message of all art. That's it. I am. I don't want to preach tonight, but if you do go to the story of Moses, right, and his Exodus, right, and Moses is a special ed, baby. Does, stammered, and you know, Moses would be put in a special ed class. And he goes to the mountain, he sees the burning bush, and God appears to him, and God says, listen, you got to go tell Pharaoh to let my people go and release us and get our liberation. And he goes, I can't do that. Look at them. He said, no, you're the one, baby, so that's it. It's over. Accept it. Accept your gift, right? And he goes, I'm appearing to you as God. He goes, well, what do I tell my people who you are? He goes, I am. Just say I am. And I praise God I'm an artist. I praise God I'm an educator. I'm so glad that this work is a witness. And I hope you're a witness too. And thank you so much for having me here. Because you're blessing me. Thank you. Do you want to? If you have, do you want do questions here? I don't know how you do it, you know, so. But I will answer anything. And I like to fight. Yes, please.
I wish we could clone you and put you all over the United States.
Wonderful.
It might be in the works without me knowing it, but, you know. I don't think the school system would like it. To be honest, so. I think the kids would like it, though. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. Are you from the Bronx? No? No, I'm sorry. This gentleman here, but he knew. You know the Bronx. So you know I'm not lying. I'm not exaggerating. Actually, I'm sugarcoating it a little, to be honest. Yeah. Anyone want to be a teacher in here?
Have any of your students become teachers?
Yes. I was talking about it to people today. I'm thrilled that they became artists. I'm thrilled that everyone went to school. Because you don't want to go to school. Get out of my room. And don't waste my pencil lead. This is an investment. All right, and not only just for you, but I want you to go into these environments and change the culture of these stupid schools. Right? Diversity works both ways. It isn't like, oh, let's let people in. But it's also going in and making a change in the institution, which is why, you know. But yeah. But what is so exciting is that I can use examples. So yeah, Rick is a teacher now. Robert Branch. They want him to go into the Marines at the age of 16. I said, no way, you're going to be cannon fodder. Uh-uh. He ended up going to Cooper Union, and then he went to Teachers College at Columbia University. He's working for his PhD, and he is the Director of Educational Technology at Columbia. That's all right. Ala Ebtekar, the gangbanger, now is professor at Berkeley. Danny Castillo, who I love, went to Bard, full scholarship, and now he's teaching in the New York Public Schools. I'm thrilled to death. I'm thrilled to death. It's wonderful when they become artists. I don't care. You don't need to be an artist. It's not about that. Just be a citizen, a real citizen of the world, and give back to the community. But I am most proud when my folk and my family go into the field. Because I don't know if we need any more great artists, but we sure as hell need some great teachers. Am I right? Yeah, we really need more educators. Yes. Yes.
You said you had a couple of girls in your group.
Mm-hmm.
Have they had the same success as the boys in your group?
Unfortunately, no. And I think it has a lot to do with the Latino culture. And Ivania went to school. That was good. But Annette, they tend, the pressure to just have the baby as soon as you possibly can and get out of the house and get subsidized and, you know, live that kind of life. And they're great mothers. Annette lives right across the street from me. Now, Aracelis is great. She became a photographer, so she's really, really successful. We'll see what's going to happen. What really works is I'm in Maine now, and we're doing a project inspired by the great Senator Margaret Chase Smith. And it's a huge commission, and yes, it is Obama stimulus money, but it's all going to Bangor, Maine, the most depressed little town you ever saw in your life. But what's fascinating is that when we put the call out, it was all girls. Yeah, and I'm thrilled. And it's just a whole, I don't know, it's the spirit of Senator Smith or something, one of the first women senators. So, but now the boys are starting to bang on the door because, you know, they want to get in on it or something. But these are little kids, too. So, unfortunately, I work with teenagers. Not the best arena to start a gendered utopia. Especially without the structure of the schools and all this and all that. So I'm doing the best I can. But also, the studio is always open to everybody. But it can be kind of rough and tumble in there, too. So, yeah. Yes, hi.
I was just curious. I'm a teacher. I teach reading for sixth graders. And I've used art before to have them inference, and they love it. But when I was watching what you were doing, I was thinking how, because I love making them read much more high quality works than we get in the
textbook. I love you, good.
But it's a little inaccessible for certain, you know, different groups. And what I was wondering is, have you ever done it the other way with an English teacher where they got a work of art and they produced a piece of writing?
Oh, sure. It happens all the time. We do that all the time because I drag my kids to places like this. drag them to the point where they are so comfortable that they know the guards by name. And in fact, one of my ex-KOSers, Dennis Cintron, is now supervisor of all the guards at MoMA. Cool, right? Angel is best friend. Very cool. You know, and I said, you have a better job than I do, dude. I'm not, you know. Yeah, no, you can, yeah, it's, it, you, I'm, I can't do a recipe. I get that a lot, you know, do the Tim Rollins and KOS method, and I think that would ruin it. In a funny way. It's like, you know, those over, I'm not the Rachel Ray of education, thank God, you know. And so, yeah, you could easily bring your kids to the museum, right? And then just have them generate writing, creative writing, in response to what they're looking at. What I think a really good thing is just hitting me. I don't know if you've done this, but it'd be really fun to bring them in and then they see the art, they see who did the art, right? Like, you know, and then write the artist a letter asking them from history, what are you up to? I don't get it. Why did you do this? Why did you do that? One of my favorite assignments, because the kids hated to write, and so I said, good, we're going to have an hour assignment, and you're going to tell me how much you hate writing for the whole hour. And they're hilarious. They're brilliant. You know, and it starts repeating and repeating, but you just got to force them to do it. And I'm reading you, and one thing we must do in this nation is for a lot of weird reasons and attitudes and stuff, but we've been teaching to the lowest common denominator, and you must teach to the highest common denominator, because the kids detect when you know that they are capable of excellence. They detect your faith in that, and they will respond. They always, look at this, come on. They will totally respond.
Can you talk a little bit about your perception of why the art world was so quick to embrace what you guys were doing?
But they weren't.
Tell us about that.
Oh, my God. No. Oh, no. We were the barbarians at the gate. Oh, it was so hard to do this. And that was part of the challenge and the excitement of it. You know, and this is before, I think it's great because my great friend Glenn has a big exhibition here that we saw at the Whitney. We came up together. Tim Rollins and KOS, Felix Gonzalez Torres, and Glenn were in the one room together in the first Whitney Biennial that we were in. We came up together, right? And I think artists like Glenn, I think artists like we and definitely Felix really opened up, because it was airtight and white. And see, I'm a contradictory figure because I got one foot here, one foot here. I was in the art world. We started a thing called Group Material, but then I got convicted by my situation teaching in that public school, you know. And now I live in the neighborhood and I'm an activist and I'm chairman of the historic district. So it's not just art. You have to operate on all those fronts. But no, it was really rough. There is an interview that I did about the 80s in Art Forum. I think you can go online. And that question was, we kept knocking on the door. We literally would show up and people would see the kids and they'd slam the door in our faces. I'm a witness to this.
You must have had such a reputation, Tim, from your work with Root Material, because, you know, Art Forum's not asking just everybody.
No, but this, well, yeah, but Art Forum just asked me 2 years ago. Oh, now everybody's asking, you know, because we didn't go away. They thought this is never gonna, I'm the rumors, and there was a rumor that I had Chris killed because I had molested him, or, you know, I mean, just unbelievable. I mean, it just, it's hard. But luckily we had our love, and we had our family, and I had, you know, the art world is not the end all and be all of everything, and luckily I operate on many fronts at once. It's fascinating because we're going to the Whitney Museum. This is great irony, okay? And we are in the Malcolm X works, our inner show, curated by the wonderful Thelma Golden, who we came up with also. And in the show is called Black Male, M-A-L-E, and it is about the image of masculinity in African-American art, and we were lucky to be included. Here we go. Everyone is no longer like little You know? And I said, you know, we're all in suits and Versace and looking great and beautiful and whatnot. And on the evening of the show, still on 10th Avenue, coming out of our studio that's on 26th Street, it's still, I'm the one that has to be kind of in the front to get the cab. And then we all get in the cab, and then the driver freaks. And I said, we're together. We're a group. We're going to the Whitney Museum. All right? Want another story? I'll give you another story. You want to hear this, but it's true. And museums need to hear this, all right? Here we go. We are invited by Jasper Johns to the opening of his retrospective at the Museum of Modern Art. We walk in, beautiful. Angel, this really killed Angel. And Angel's really proud. And we go on in, and I walk in. Wow, this is so great. The guards bum rush my folk, the family, all right, my sons. Yo, guys, where'd you get these invitations? Where'd you get them from? What? We've been invited. We're in the collection. We are in it. Nah, what? Come on. Da, 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 da. Unbelievable. And the painful part is that the guards look like them. Ouch. So, Angel, I don't want to make art. I don't want to do that. I said, you got to fight. We got to fight this. And you fight it by being excellent and beautiful and elegant and go back to Dr. King, all right? Kill him with kindness. Kill him with excellence. You have the victory already, and your victory is in your praise, and your artwork is your praise. I believe that. I don't have to believe it. I've proven it. There you go. Anything? I think we should stop.